This is a podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum. For further information, please go to www.rafmuseum.org/podcasts.
The Siege of Malta, Part 2, 1942. By 1942, Malta had been at war for almost 2 years. The defence forces had managed to fend off two determined efforts to neutralise the island. The RAF had built its strength up to 3 fighter squadrons, ably supported by aircraft from the Fleet Air Arm and a barrage of ground defences. But despite the optimistic outlook, 1942 started badly for Malta. A period of terrible weather prevented Malta's fighters from carrying out their defensive task. Ta'ali and Halfar had also become waterlogged, so their fighters had to move to Lua, which was already overcrowded. This concentration of aircraft in one area meant that opportunist attacks by enemy bombers inflicted maximum damage. The onslaught continued to intensify, provoked by successful attacks on Tripoli and Castel Vetrano airfield by Malta-based bombers. In just 5 weeks, from January to February, the enemy mounted nearly 2,000 bomber raids against Malta. On the 7th of February, there were 16 raids within 24 hours, destroying most of the bombers at dispersal in Lua. The situation was grim when squadron leader Stan Turner arrived at 249 Squadron to revitalise fighter operations in Malta. A veteran of the Battle of Britain, Turner recognised, as many pilots serving on Malta already had, that the dwindling Hurricane force was nearing the limits of its use. As Wing Commander Laddie Lucas describes,
"The few Hurricane 2s which remained serviceable had seen better days. Their work rate had been extraordinary, their results indisputable. But the brute fact had to be faced. Tactically and for speed, the Messerschmitt 109Fs had the measure of them."
Squadron leader Turner and the Air Officer Commanding Malta, Air Vice Marshal Lloyd, called for rapid deployment of Spitfires to the island. Lloyd also began a massive campaign of extension and construction to repair landing areas, extend taxiways and build more dispersal pens. In just 3 months, army soldiers built 27 miles of taxi tracks, 14 heavy bomber pens, 170 fighter pens, 70 pens for reconnaissance aircraft, and 31 fleet air arm pens, all while under threat from frequent air raids. Army personnel even helped RAF ground crews with rearming and refueling. All the while, the Luftwaffe was gaining air superiority, with fighter bombers on low-level attacks severely damaging Malta's airfields. The much-needed Spitfires did not arrive until early March, but they were in action almost immediately. The Luftwaffe were now sending 170 bombers a day over Malta, with devastating effect, as many Hurricanes and Spitfires were destroyed on the ground. More batches of Spitfire were sent via the American carrier USS Wasp, but the German intelligence was good, and as soon as the aircraft landed, they were targeted by a force of 306 dive bombers. Within 3 days, the airfields at Ta'ali and Lua had been ruined, and 30 of the 47 new aircraft had been destroyed. By the end of April, 23 Spitfires and 18 Hurricanes had been eradicated, and another 87 aircraft damaged. At times, the RAF on Malta was almost extinct, and the situation was taking its toll on the pilots involved. Wing Commander Tim Johnston summed up the experience.
"When we'd been getting away with it, we'd found the odds against us rather exhilarating. But now we had suffered our first losses, the prospects had suddenly become more depressing. On the first day, the enemy aircraft had operated in a stream, but singly. Since then, we'd been 2 against 40, 4 against 30 plus, and 6 against 35 plus.
On the days that the RAF could put up no cover at all, Malta's fighter control would transmit a dummy radio communication to fool the Luftwaffe. Thankfully, a lull came at the end of April. 601 and 603 squadrons had arrived on Malta, and Spitfires were being deployed more effectively. The Germans also believed that Malta had been neutralised, so much so that Albert Kesselring boasted that there is nothing left to bomb. The breathing space allowed more Spitfires to be delivered, with 138 arriving by early June. The catastrophic destruction of Spitfires from the USS Wasp had prompted a rethink in the methods of getting new aircraft to Malta. Experienced battle-trained pilots would lead the new pilots into land, and the aircraft would have to be able to get off the ground again before the enemy could attack. Laddie Lucas describes the process.
"Where possible, Malta-based pilots had to be ready to take over the new Spitfires and get them airborne. To achieve this, pilots and ground crews would be standing by in the sandbag dispersal points at immediate readiness. Petrol and ammunition would be available in each pen. Such serviceable aircraft as remained on the island would be airborne to cover the landings.
The plans were so finely drilled and rehearsed that an aircraft could be turned around in just 6 minutes. These new tactics were very effective, and air superiority was slowly being regained by the Malta squadrons. However, while Spitfires had been steadily arriving, other supplies had not. The disruption of shipping caused food, fuel, and other commodities to be in very short supply. Convoys were attacked before they could reach Malta, and these rough battles were claiming significant victories. For example, of two Allied convoys that sailed for Malta in early June, only one arrived, the other being so badly attacked it had to return to Alexandria. When Air Vice Marshal Keith Park arrived in July to relieve Hugh Pugh Lloyd as Air Officer Commanding Malta, there were supplies enough for just 3 more weeks. The people were starving and there was little left to defend the island with. Whilst enemy attacks had eased off, occasional nuisance raids were mounted, forcing the RAF to waste vital resources. Wing Commander Tim Johnston watched one of them from the roof of his mess building.
This time Kesselring craftily sent over a dummy raid at 4:30 p.m. and all the Spitfires took off. The real raid didn't materialise until 5:20, and at 6 o'clock a fresh wave of 109s came in to do some circuit strafing. It was agonising to watch the tired Spits, with no ammunition and seriously short on fuel, circling the field and trying to pick a path to land among the new craters under continual harassment.
Despite such hardships, Air Vice Marshal Park was determined to strike back with counterattacks rather than simply defending. Using the tactics that had proved so effective in the Battle of Britain, he briefed the squadrons to intercept and engage the enemy before it reached Malta. This strategy was very successful. In the first 11 days of July, the Malta fighters shot down 78 enemy aircraft for the loss of 21. The losses suffered by one German unit were so heavy it had to be withdrawn from operations. In August 1942, the Allies assembled the largest convoy to date as the supply situation in Malta became critical. Known as Operation Pedestal, the convoy consisted of 14 transports protected by an escort of 44 warships. The main convoy would sail from Gibraltar, whilst a diversionary operation was staged from Alexandria. The convoy was attacked relentlessly and 13 ships were sunk, including 9 of the freighters. The cost was high, but some of the precious cargo made it through. With renewed supplies, things were more optimistic. The number of offensive sorties against enemy convoys to Tripoli increased with much success, demonstrated by the fact that enemy shipping now tended to use a more easterly route. It was possible to mount offensive sweeps over Sicily, and later even night intruder missions. Along with the Royal Navy submarines and Fleet Air Arm torpedo bombers, the RAF bombers wreaked havoc on Axis shipping, severely limiting vital supplies and reinforcements to Rommel's forces in North Africa. The Luftwaffe responded with yet another campaign against Malta, regrouping in Sicily. In October, they flew 1,400 sorties over the island, but by now the Malta squadrons were well equipped and they destroyed 114 enemy aircraft for the loss of 27 Spitfires. The 11th of October was the beginning of an 8-day blitz in which some 600 enemy aircraft took part. The defending Spitfires took down 132 of them, the ground gunners another 8, and 64 just never made it back to Sicily. Malta's forward interception system ensured that fewer raiders reached the island, and no Maltese airfield was made unserviceable for more than a few minutes. On the 23rd of October 1942, the British 8th Army made its historic attack on El Alamein, and Malta could at last see some permanent relief on the horizon. Soon afterwards, the Allies intercepted a message calling for supplies to North Africa. In response, 20 Beauforts took off from Lua and Halfar, sinking 4 of the 5 ships sent out from Italy. B-24s of the US Army Air Force destroyed the remaining one before it could be unloaded. By now, raids on Malta had declined dramatically as the enemy realised that Malta could not be beaten. Convoys were reaching the island with less and less harassment, and a new airfield opened at Rendi, adding another squadron to Malta's fighter defences. The convoy which finally ended the siege of Malta was codenamed Operation Stone Age. It set sail from Alexandria on the 16th of November 1942, and despite being attacked by enemy aircraft, it reached Malta without loss. It was escorted in by bow fighters and Spitfires, and no attempt was made to attack the ships as they unloaded in the harbour. Air raids continued sporadically until July 1943, but they were mostly token efforts. For 30 months, Malta had sustained unbelievable damage and suffered horrific casualties. At the peak of the enemy offensive during the first half of 1942, there was only one 24-hour period without air raids. Luftwaffe records indicate that between March and April of that year, Malta was subjected to 11,819 sorties and over 6,500 tons of bombs. The siege had caused significant hardships for everyone on Malta. Many had lost their lives and even more were left homeless. Businesses and civil infrastructure were destroyed and the island came close to starvation on several occasions. Yet the resolve of the Maltese people never wavered, even when it seemed that the RAF were beaten. As Wing Commander Johnston said,
"It would be understandable if they showed some surliness when they saw us on the ground and not in the air, and it's to their credit that they never do."
It is this attitude for which the island was awarded the George Cross on the 15th of April 1942, when the siege was at its height. The pilots and ground crew showed a similar resolve, working in conditions unlike anything they had experienced before. That they were able to put up such a robust defence with limited resources and under constant attack is a testament to their courage and determination to get the job done. As Wing Commander Tom Neal sums up,
"What a hell of a place to have to come to."
Thanks for listening to this podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum.